别整脸庞，哎，
就别整脸庞，哎。
Wednesday from 4 to 6, right here on AshevilleFM.org.
You are listening to Asheville FM at WSFM LP 103.3 Asheville.
Hello, hello. You are listening to Slumber Party. I am Jake. We want to give a big shout out and a lot of love to Michelle, who could not be here today. She is recovering from a surgery, and we hope that she is having a speedy recovery, and we hope she makes it back here soon. We have James Fisher in the house.
Yes, indeed.
With us for the duration, the next 2 hours. He is ours.
I am, as always, thrilled to be co-hosting the Slumber Party. And definitely thinking healing vibes for Michelle, sending lots of love like the entire community always does for her.
Yeah, we are. And we also got mad love for our other guest, Ayanna Czak-Blatt. Welcome to Slumber Party, Ayanna. You've been here before wearing a different hat than you're wearing today. And we're so happy that you're wearing your author hat. Today, you have a fantastic new book out. The title is A Tangled Tree, My Father's Path to Immortality.
Yes, thank you both so much for having me. And also, I'm thinking of Michelle and sending her some love today. It's really a pleasure to be here today to talk about this new book. So thank you so much for having me.
Well, we're so happy to have you here. And I know we've been friends for a while, and I remember very well you talking about this book back when it was in the idea stage, mm-hmm. when we were at Mountain Express years ago. And it's so nice to have the book in my hand right now that this idea came to fruition, because I can't tell you how many ideas I've had for books and various other things that never come to fruition. And it's so awesome that you actually made it happen. And not that you made it happen, but that you made it happen so well. I mean, I'm not done with it yet. I'm about 100 pages in, and I just love it so far.
Well, thank you so much. It's actually a really special thing to be here with you both today, because when we were all at the Express in 2010, when this journey really began, you were there as witnesses. You know, it all started in 2010 when my father came to Asheville for 1 month and recorded his life story in my one-bedroom apartment in Montford. At the time, I was working at 10 a.m., so we woke up early and we recorded in the morning, and then I came home and we recorded in the evening, and his life story really spilled and filled that apartment. And I remember seeing you in the hallways at the paper, both of you, being like, oh my God, this is such a crazy time in my life, and I appreciate you both being there as witnesses and friends. And I also feel very grateful to be here with the book finished in my hand. Like, I can drop it and it won't just be pages on the floor. It's a real bound book. I'm grateful for my publishers who are local, and it's actually my publisher's birthday today, Steve Creamy.
Happy birthday, Steve.
And it's interesting too, because today is also my father's birthday.
What?
Yeah, 76 years old. So it's kind of fortuitous that it's happening today and that I get a chance to share. And it's also my first public, you know, radio promotion of the book. So it's a really beautiful thing to be here on my dad's birthday. And it kind of shifted a little bit about what I thought I would share, because it's his birthday. So,
yeah. So I'm so excited to hear you read some excerpts of the book. But it's funny what you were saying about telling us, you know, at Mountain Express that your dad was in town. And I do remember. I remember very clearly, and it was coming back to me while I was reading the book, because there is a section of the book where you're very much writing about what it was like having your dad visit you, and you, you know, had quite the experience with him here. And I remember you just kind of hinting ever so subtly about what was maybe really going on at work or whatever, like, my dad's in town, I haven't seen him in a while, he's kind of crazy, da 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 da. And now I'm really seeing what was really going on, because this book, it's not just about your dad. It's about you, and it's about your upbringing. It's about your relationship with your dad. It's also a book about the process of writing a book. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot going on. And really, it sounds like the book was in the works well before he even came here for those interviews. So maybe just – I'd love to hear your perspective a little bit about really the beginnings
of this story.
Book, because it really started out when you were in college.
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, the story started my sophomore year. It actually started with a very short story that I wrote for a nonfiction writing class that was just this memory of my father. And he was telling me this story, and I was a child, and I wasn't really understanding, but I knew something significant had happened to him in his past. And I wrote this memory of him referring to his childhood in Israel. He's a boy, a refugee, and very poor. And they're eating garlic sandwiches on bread because they couldn't afford anything more. And his mother, my grandmother, would say, close your eyes and you can pretend it's beef. And as a child, I heard this story and it made an impact, but I didn't know where to place it in history. And so as a young writer, I was exploring these pieces of my father that I had never really picked up on until then, and that there was this whole history to him and to me that I had not explored as, you know, a boy born on the eve of World War II, and as a man who then held those wounds, and me being a child, not really able to understand what that means. So I started kind of writing about it, and I realized there was this whole side of my history and my family and of my father that I had no idea. I hadn't ever really thought to explore. So that kind of opened up the question of my heritage and my family and where I come from. I traveled to Eastern Europe. I was lucky I traveled abroad my junior year. And for one of the breaks, I went to Poland. It was in the middle of winter. It was cold. It's kind of the perfect time to go back to Eastern Europe to do, like, experience Holocaust history, because it's bleak, it's gray, and that's kind of how it should be, I guess, when you're on that kind of journey. And then kind of picking up pieces of the trail where my grandfather was born, going through Eastern Europe and writing then, too, about the experience of what does it mean to come from this and yet to be such a privileged individual where my life is so rich compared to where my grandparents and what my father was born into, trying to grapple with that contradiction within myself. So that's really where the writing came from. But then when Dad called and said, you know, I'm ready to tell my life story, I was like, well, I have to be the one to tell it. I'm meant to tell it. Like I've been seeking already. And so I was really hungry to hear from him. And it was a beautiful experience. I mean, it was hard and beautiful, but in the end, you know, I got my father back too. I really reconnected with him and his soul. And I feel like I know him well. And I'm grateful for that experience because it brought us together again and it helped me to see him through a different perspective and understand why and how he is so complicated and beautiful. So it did begin a long time ago, but it really kind of took form in Asheville. It's like the pieces kind of were waiting to be strung together.
Mm. I'm glad to hear that now it sounds like the book has brought you closer together, because as you write in the book, the book also brought up a lot of tensions between you and him. You didn't shy away from some of the more critical thoughts you've had on him, mm-hmm. and how he dealt with his
life choices,
wives and his children and that kind of thing. And it sounds like, from my reading of it, that the final product here was very different than maybe what he thought you were going to be writing. And it sounds like when he read some of what you were writing, his initial response was anger and
yes.
frustration with what you wrote. He was not happy with it and that it was not necessarily going to bring you two
right together. And that's very true. And that is the kind of the core conflict of the story within the story. It's like my truth versus his truth and kind of a contradiction embedded into the book itself. What I think versus what he thinks. And that tension, I think, makes it a more dynamic story. At the time, it was a really difficult experience that we had of conflicting expectations of what the book would be. And then greater questions in literature of who owns a story. Is it my turf? Is it his turf? It's his life. I'm reimagining it. Who owns this material and who has the right to say how it's portrayed? So that's kind of this greater conflict between us. And with time and in the final version of the book, I think we've come somewhere else, but that tension definitely pulls a lot of weight in the story. But we have come to a place of understanding. And I think ultimately the final product is one that he is proud of and that I'm proud of, despite the conflict. There's kind of this acceptance of it's both. It's both my turmoil and my love, and it's his beauty and his shadow, but also it's greater than us. It's more of a family portrait, a journey of three generations, and it's rife with conflict at every turn, and that's just one layer.
And maybe for folks reading, you could just, I mean, we can't get into all the detail of your father's life and your upbringing because both are quite extraordinary, but I do think it's important listeners have a little bit of understanding of the kind of man and the kind of father we're talking about. Because while I think everyone could relate, we all have tensions, we all have different points of view than our parents. He lived a very unusual
yeah,
lifestyle.
Totally. I'd love to read a little section that's kind of a nice description of him from my child's perspective that might give a sense of that. Mm-hmm. Is that a good...
Yeah, that'd be fantastic.
Okay, great.
You are listening to Slumber Party on Asheville FM, 103.3 FM. We're here with Ayanna, who is going to read a section of her brand new fabulous book, A Tangled Tree, My Father's Path to Immortality. And you can see Ayanna also at Malaprops on June 3rd. And is Malaprops currently carrying the book?
I think it is. Yeah, I think they are. And I'll also be having two other events later in the month, too. Congregation Beth Israel and Firestorm Books. So I'll give those dates maybe at the end. But thank you. And here is the first excerpt that I'd like to share. From a very early age, I'm aware that my father is different. He sets himself apart both deliberately and obliviously. His clothing, short and torn, his Eastern European accent, enchanting, his long, tangled brown hair and wise man's beard, his stories and life philosophies, his faith, his peculiar healing diet and his lifestyle, a veiled but ferocious temper. There is both a bright spark of light that illuminates his soul and a dark shadow that flickers in his eyes. My father prides himself on his freedom in the world. Though he possesses great wealth and property, he is bound to none and comes and goes as he pleases. He is liberated from the obligations of work, established religions, law, corporate capitalism, custom, courtesy, and clothing. As his child, I adore him, and yet I'm frightened by the sheer power of his personality. I observe how others perceive him, a wild-haired hippie, a barefoot bum, an enlightened being, a sage, a rabbi, a healer, a man who is filled with wisdom and refuses to conform. As his child, I feel that I'm different too. His status, either as a leader or a rebel, rubs off on me in the eyes of the world. I stand in the light of his intrigue, shy and self-conscious, curious and quiet. My childhood memories of Dad are sensory saturated. When I think of my travels with him as a small girl, from the age of 3 to 11, I am flooded with the sensations of the places he took me, the strange smells, tastes, scenes, the feel of our summers together come back to me. Closing my eyes, I find myself a child again, swept up in Dad's extraordinary adventure. In one memory, I am 6 years old and swimming in the holy Dead Sea. The water burns the blisters on my ankles, makes them ache and makes them heal. Dad is beside me, pointing west towards a burning, setting sun. He turns in the thick water, and see that, the mountains there? That's Jordan, another country beyond Israel. We are floating, coated in salt, buoyant in a slowly sinking sea. What happened to the sea, I ask my dad. Why did it die? It's called Yam HaMelah, Sea of Salt, my father says. Lick your lips and taste. An acidic, metallic tang burns my tongue. You see, my father says, holding me tight, nothing wants to live in water that tastes like this. In another memory, I'm 7 years old, in the back of a milk truck turned funked up Winnebago with my father at the wheel as we drive across the country following the Grateful Dead. Myself, my father, and a new girlfriend, a blonde woman with piercing blue eyes and a husky dog Bear, all live in the back of the bago, as we call it. The highway is wide and open and empty, and Dad drives slowly, cautiously. His girlfriend is in the passenger seat rolling a joint, which they pass back and forth before rolling another. I am in the back with the dog, sitting in a cloud of marijuana smoke as we creep across the freeway. Flat cornfield-filled fields roll by. Sitting on my father's shoulders at a Dead show, I comb my fingers through his hair and watch 100 balloons rise from the stage. 6 men cause thousands of people to erupt in applause, to shout, scream, dance, and cry out with joy. Dad has shoved cotton balls in my ears, and the sounds are muffled, muted, distant. I focus on the balloons, on uneven, wobbly paths that they make as they rise from the stage, and I hold tight to my father. The atmosphere is enchanting and a little terrifying, too. Lights swivel and twirl across a massive crowd, and adults act like children again, uncoordinated, exuberant, throwing their limbs madly as they move. It is a sea of psychedelic people, skeletons, blood-red roses, beards, widely tossed hair, and tie-dyed shirts, stretching far and in all directions. Everyone is dancing, and the songs never seem to end.
Fantastic.
Beautiful writing, Ayanna, really. I feel when I read this book and there's other vignettes in that section I remember in terms of memories you have, and they're so vivid. I don't know how you have such a good memory. I was thinking about, what do I remember when I was 7? Maybe I would remember stuff better if I was having those kind of experiences. But the way you put the words together really make me feel like I'm there with you in that van, like I'm on the beach with you in Hawaii when you get into your dad's psychedelic mushroom honey at 5 years old, you know, or any number of other situations you found yourself in with this non-traditional family. So when I read the book, not only do I feel like I'm learning a lot about your father, but I'm learning a lot about you. What's it feel like to share such an intimate perspective of yourself and who you are with people like me and the rest of the world right now?
I think at first I felt like I was going to be standing naked in front of the entire world forever. But now I think with some distance between the writing process and the editing and the publishing process, I feel more like this is just a story. It's mine, but it's material also that's been kind of massaged into being. So I feel a little like more able to share it than I think I did when I started. And I think I had this like anxiety about being so exposed and also about exposing my family. And that anxiety has just passed as I have committed to this product and committed to the writing. Just over years, it just gets easier to just tell it like it is and just to stand by it. And it kind of hopefully will make it better if it's honest and kind of raw and vulnerable.
I imagine you not only learned a lot about your father through this writing process, but you learned a lot about yourself. Can you share a little bit about maybe what that process was like for you?
Definitely. I felt very humbled to realize that in the first draft, I was carrying so much kind of judgment and anger at my father that a close reader said, you know, if I took back my own judgments and just stripped out my opinions and let the story carry itself, it would be stronger because I was such a harsh critic. But I also realized that I was a harsh critic because of my own, you know, hurts and wounds, but that the story had kind of caused a healing in myself too, that I was able to kind of bring forth into the book. I hope that judgment falls away to this kind of beautiful acceptance of who my father is, of who we are as complicated people, myself included, that there aren't easy answers that can be tied up or wrapped up easily within a story like this, that, you know, maybe I had gone in thinking I would understand him. And in the end, I realized you can't really understand anyone. So in myself, too, just a little bit more humility of what I saw in myself and also some gratitude for the way that I was able to shift my perspective from the judgment to a place of acceptance of really seeing someone for who they are, and hopefully for you know, providing an opportunity for me to open my mind and heart without pain or judgment clouding it. I also learned that it's a process of endurance and commitment. I'm proud of myself for sticking with it. The creative process is hard, and any artist faces so much trial and rejection, and whether it's trying to find an agent or trying to find a publisher, you really have to stick with it. I imagine it's the same with music and submitting visual art, that you really just have to believe in it and stick with it. So I learned that about myself too, is I can be a very persistent person, and that was that was a experience that I didn't expect it to be so difficult to really stay motivated and to stay focused. But I'm grateful.
Well, yeah, clearly you did. I mean, you know, 2010 is when the sort of chronicling of the interviewing process started, right? Mm-hmm. And now you're publishing in 2017. So, you know, that's a long stretch. You had to be persistent. Did you ever feel during that time, you know what, I've tried, you know, this is a good process, but I think I've hit a wall. I'm just going to walk away from it.
I don't think I did, because I had wrapped up so much of my identity into the book. It was like I had felt like I was the book, like I would be failing myself, that there would be some like massive failure if I didn't complete it, just because it was so much of what I devoted myself to.
Yeah.
Yeah, in a very practical way, you are the book in the cover, you and your father. I love this image.
Yeah.
How it's your face and your father's face weaved together, because to me, that is a lot of what the book is. It's a weaving of your story and his story, your perspective with his perspective, and the contradictions and the different viewpoints and the different vivid experiences.
Who did the cover?
Yeah, it's a friend of mine, a local artist, Jackie Maloney. I actually met her doing a story at the paper about her art. I gave her a bunch of photos of us, of my father and I, and I just gave her this crazy concept of us being one face. Yeah. And it was kind of scary because she said, you know, that wasn't that hard. You guys really look alike, you know.
Well, I mean, not really. I mean, your dad is a big hairy, wizardy, bearded man, and I don't really have much of a beard or anything like that.
No beard, but it's kind of the same, like, I don't know, shape in our face and kind of wrinkles around the eyes.
You must have, while you were writing this, and been thinking a lot about the similarities and the differences you have to your father. I mean, I think every child does that with their parents, you know, sometimes favorably and sometimes not. You know, I know there's certain situations where I'll find myself doing or saying something and I'm like, oh my God, I sound just like my dad, like in a way that's like frustrated with myself because I don't necessarily want to repeat those patterns. Mm-hmm. And then other times I might do the same thing and be like, oh, that's so cool. I'm like my dad in that way. Like, I love that about mm-hmm. my dad, and he's inside of me. So mm-hmm. I imagine that must have been happening for you, but even more intensely.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely my father's daughter in many ways, and at the same time also just trying to, you know, step back from certain choices that he's made too, that I don't make for myself. And I think that's pretty normal for kids to kind of, you know, like for me, just wanting to write this book and show how we are similar, but how we're different too.
James was really relating to the on tour with the Grateful Dead memories, although he was quite a bit older than you at the time. You guys could have been at some of the same Dead
shows. Well, this is crazy. So there's one tour that I really got into taking pictures of the scene, and really not the show, but it was all the scene, the Shakedown Street, the merchants, and the parking lot. And I have a bunch of pictures of kids. I was always, you know, I was high school, early college, but I was always fascinated by these, you know, touring kids. And I went through those not long ago, and I have one. It's a little dark haired girl, and she's painting at a table, like a little art setup was for her. Meriwether Post. Did you ever make it to Meriwether?
I don't know exactly where we ended up. I just remember the sea of RVs and the city cars and people.
Well, for me, it was fascinating because that was just in no way, shape, or form a possible universe for me. You know, my dad, you know, Jerry Fisher would not have been taken to a Dead show.
Well, and this is one of the interesting things I think about the book. To a lot of folks, maybe thinking about the kind of lifestyle of growing up on tour with the Grateful Dead would be like their dream come true. A lot of people did that kind of to rebel against their, you know, upbringing in more of a, you know, buttoned up way or more of a traditional American dream way. Mm-hmm. And there was this great fantasy that it would somehow be kind of heaven to be on the open road and having the kind of experiences you were having. At the same time, from my perspective, what I've seen is that no matter how you're raised, you want to rebel against it in one way or the other. So a lot of friends of mine that have grown up in kind of bohemian ways, like, rebel against their parents or their upbringing by, like, going and being a stockbroker or something like that. I'm curious your thoughts on how you've either accepted that kind of lifestyle or rebelled against it yourself.
Yeah. Well, in some ways, I feel like the book was a little bit of an act of rebellion. And when my dad first read it, it was shocking, you know, my opinions and my perspective and having myself be such a big role in the book. So in some ways, it's like, you know, I think the rebellion was also the interpretation of him. But I also think that there's, I mean, I know that he's very happy with it and that there's a lot of beauty in it too. But in some sense, me continuing to write the book despite the conflict that we went through was an act of rebellion. Like, I wasn't gonna stop, you know, and I'm grateful that I didn't, and I know he's grateful for it too. But it's like I took all of this material and I kept it for myself. And in some ways, I mean, as a parent, can you imagine if your child was just storing up all of these like amazing secrets and then decided to just share them all? And they're not just
James just got scared thinking of his kids doing that to him. We're like,
I mean, in some ways, that's kind of a scary thought. Yeah. I hope I did so with grace and with love, but at the same time, I also did it in a way that like I wanted the real
with honesty
complexities of the situation to be seen. And felt.
So I'm getting the feel when your dad said, you know, I'm ready for you know, to tell this story. Was his impression maybe at first that was like you were going to be more of a chronicler, like I want you to listen to my life and kind of chronicle all this, you know, all these very, very different experiences that he had from his perspective. Was that part of his surprise that you took it more from your perspective?
Yeah, I think that my perspective was shocking because anyone, you know, sees their own life in their own eyes with their own filter. And to have someone else's ideas and judgments and memories that are, you know, they combat and they fight with your own.
Yeah.
But I think that's what makes the story so dynamic, too, is it's not just a one-person perspective of what made life, you know, interesting or exciting or difficult or beautiful, but it's that life. And then it's also seen by the child that was raised beside that life and all of those, you know, different perspectives. So I think our contract, our agreement was kind of vague. And maybe that was the beginning of the issue is when we came together, I was just listening. I was absorbing this story. And I'd love to read a really short little paragraph about when he introduces himself in Asheville.
We would love to hear it. Yeah. If you're just tuning in, this is Slumber Party. I'm Jake Frankel. We got our man James Fisher with us for the duration till 6 o'clock. And we're talking to the local author, our friend Ayanna Czak Blatt, who has her new book, A Tangled Tree, My Father's Paths to Immortality.
Just singular, path.
Path.
But it looks, it's curvy cursive, so.
But it could be paths, because he walked many paths in
That's
life.
That's true.
Where is your dad right now on his
birthday?
Right
now, hopefully he's tuning in and listening in California.
Hey, Ayanna's dad.
Hey.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, 76 years old. So here's a moment in our life in Asheville when he comes to record his life story. Dad, if you were going to introduce yourself to someone to tell them about your life, what would you say? I hit record on the digital recorder I bought in preparation. My father, in a thoughtful, playful voice, tells me this. Well, honey, I lost a few teeth along the way. Not a bad price to pay for this most magnificent life I have led. A life that really blows my own mind when I look back and I remember. My 6 children, my Jewish parents, the Shabbos candles I lit around the world, and myself years ago and now, still handsome, timeless and immortal. Immortal? My soul is eternal, he says. Plus, I'm getting younger every day. My father laughs, grinning a near toothless grin. Certainly, I expected life to be simpler. However, I don't regret any of it. I wouldn't do some of it again, sugar. Once was plenty, really enough. My father looks past me, eyes falling to the branches of an old walnut tree beyond the window. I listen and let him take his time. From the Holocaust to bliss, he pauses, sucks air through his lips. But it wasn't until the early 70s, mainly through LSD, that I realized my life was going to change, that I had no idea where it would take me. That's when the model broke. The structure of society crumbled when I met my Mexican medicine man. He led me into a new dimension with just a few drops on my tongue. That was after I had my first child, he says, remembering, stroking his coarse beard. And I continued to search, to heal myself, to free myself of the burdens of my upbringing as a Jew born into genocide. Did I lose my innocence along the way? Maybe. I sure did many things that weren't so innocent. He grins lordly and shifts beside me. I'm ready for something new. After many years of preparation, God knows, and I ain't waiting. His brilliant eyes flicker around the room, and I nod him on. Everything is a big surprise when you have no routine, when you can let the day evolve. He draws it out. That's what I do every day. I watch it unfold, and I meditate on the light within. But I do it lying down, he adds. That's how the Jews meditate, to be comfortable. I laugh and listen. And I sit in the sun, and I process everything I have witnessed along the way. That's when I know I am blessed, and I am ready to be blessed by God again. And I'm ready to have the whole world blessed with joy. I give it my permission.
Wow.
James, you got to read this book, man.
Yes, I do got to read this book.
Everyone needs to read this book.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's interesting. My my mother wrote some memoirs. Just she didn't ask me to interview her, and you know she's she immigrated over from Scotland, and so she just did this memoir, and it's fascinating. But you know, it's a lot of insight into her. Her being a little girl also, and she was, you know, during the war, and that was a big impact for her. Not as, you know, as big an impact as being part of the Holocaust, of course, but it was very traumatic. But what's kind of funny about her perspective is, you know, there'll be a whole page on some story. There was a story about her pet dog got killed by another dog in Scotland, and so they had this fight, the two clans, you know, because it was the honor thing, like, you know, this whole page on this little dog, and then there's for the entire decade of me and my brothers, my sister and I, you know, this is the D.C. area, being raised, it's a page. I'm like, Mom, you know, our whole, like, the, you know, to me, that was my time. And yeah. she's like, you guys were happy. It was good. Everything, you know, and, you know, it's just, you can never see your life, you know, through someone else's eyes. And it's just the one thing that can never happen. So this is a, you know, a rare thing, and your dad obviously is somebody who's an explorer and an adventurer in life, but to have that gift, to have that perspective, you know, told back from other eyes, particularly his daughter, that's a pretty big gift.
I hope so.
Yeah.
What kind of perspective did your other family members have on this? Because your father has had a lot of other. You know,
kids.
six kids. With different mothers, and has a lot of people in his life. So did you give other and a lot of these characters fit prominently into the book as well. Did you give them a chance to read it ahead of time and give you feedback, or did you the first time they read it was the final product?
Yeah.
Here it is. You're in the book. What was that like?
I couldn't share it until it was done because I was too afraid. I was terrified that any negative feedback, I would just be paralyzed and couldn't do it.
Or even if it wasn't negative, I could see why it would just take away the independence of your voice to all of a sudden be, or even if you didn't share it with them, like for me, it would be hard just to not think about, oh, if what are they going to think of this portray them in this way or whatever. But to really do a good job as a writer, you have to just get all those concerns out of your head and just go with your instinct.
I think I edited heavily the scenes that feature my siblings, and what is in the book now is just a small piece of what was initially there. So I hope I boiled it down to like these potent short scenes that show, you know, six kids, five different women, all connected to this father, this like wandering, mystical, you know, kind of unhinged from society, but free and captivating and mysterious. And each of us have our own relationship with him. I think I was lucky in the sense that I got to have these summers with my father. My mom said, okay, you know, summers are your time with your dad. So we had 3-month adventures, June, July, and August, back when the school year really stopped and you had a long summer. And we traveled everywhere that he wanted to go. And I got this experience that I don't think other mothers felt safe enough to let their kids go. But but I'm
in
lucky.
In some cases, for good reason. I mean, these adventures were not without problems.
No, but, for sure.
Obviously, you turned out fantastic.
Thank you.
But
that's
right. Just saying.
No, I know. They were wild adventures, but beautiful ones, too. I mean, otherwise, like, my childhood was on Kauai, kind of very culturally isolated, but also an amazing place to grow up in many ways, but also a very difficult place. To be a little white girl growing up on the island is not necessarily fun. So these adventures with Dad also kind of opened up my sense of the world. You know, it was like this crazy music, these wild communes, this hippie festival. Not that I saw myself wanting to live that way myself, mm-hmm. but it showed me that all of these different possibilities. And some of the, you know, communities were more conservative. He had a home in Massachusetts that was our base. And that was just a beautiful old home in Massachusetts. So there was some, you know, there were some roots we returned to. We always returned to that house. But yes, these adventures kind of showed me in some way, like, life can be so much more and so unpredictable. And that was a blessing.
Right. But there's also, you know, your father also experienced a lot of frustrations in his life. You mentioned that house. And you write about how, against his will, one of his ex-wives
sold
that house. And it sounds to me like you don't shy away of giving a full picture. And at some points, your father comes across as very bitter mm-hmm. about certain things in his life.
Yeah, there's something that I write about that's about, like, our lifelong misunderstanding, which is about the women perspectives of his ex-wives, you know, and this is kind of a short scene about that conflict. So this kind of goes back to your question a little bit too, I think, James, of, like, you know, writing about your family and the conflict there. But I'll just share this small part.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to local author Ayanna Cizak-Blatt, reading from her new book, A Tangled Tree, My Father's Path to Immortality. She's going to be making the rounds soon at local bookstores, and I think it's a fantastic book, and it's available for you to read yourself.
Okay, so this is a little bit more about the conflict within the book when it comes to perspective. When remembering his ex-wives and the mothers of his children, my father's voice changes. It becomes low, drenched with rage, soaked in venom. There are things that I know that you will never know about the nasty acts that have been done to me. These women in my life have been no pleasure crews. And listen, that's how it was. He points at me. You must write that part of the story. I don't have to write about anything I don't want to write, but it's my life. Mine, and I want you to write it correctly. We glare at each other, knowing well the conflict of perspective that we face. Dad, I'm going to have to write about this story the way I see things, too. I'm a part of it. My father snarls at me. And ultimately, you should know that I don't want my name on it unless it tells my truth, so you best pay attention to what I say. How will I ever write about the mothers, I ask myself. Maybe I can avoid them. Maybe I can simply write one scene for each woman, 5 scenes total, all focusing on love before the fallout. I want to avoid this territory because it's painful, but I know I cannot. It is here, in the loathing in his eyes, and in his voice when speaking of mother, that my childhood fear of father was born. It is here that our contention, our lifetime's misunderstanding, will always reside.
How did you get to a point where you are now, where both of you seem to be at peace
with the book?
How it turned out, yeah.
I'm just so grateful that we are. And I think,
how did you get there?
How did we get there? We got there with some years of silence and distance. After Thailand, we had some time and space. I think we also missed each other in that time and space, you know, like we had been so close. We had spent all of this. We had this time capsule of closeness where we reforged our bond. And then
how old were you at that point?
That was in 2010. So okay. 7 years ago.
Don't make her say her age, James. That's very impolite.
I was 25 when I started, 26 when he arrived. So
she's a lot younger than you or I, James.
32 now.
That is true.
No. Yeah, and so we had all this closeness, and that closeness had come after years of distance. You know, I was really close to him as a child, and then there were these years, my high school and my college years, where my father, it was about 10 years total, my father and I weren't close. And then reconnecting in that time in Asheville, I think, was beautiful and precious, and then losing that again to the conflict, to this dilemma of whose perspective and whose right to tell the story it was, losing each other ended up being more painful than the material itself, I think. And I remember, you know, Dad and I seeing each other again in California and watching him kind of walk away from me, and he was angry and I was angry, but also this like real sadness that I didn't want my father to turn away from me like that. I wanted our relationship to come back to where it was, but yet we had so much conflict that how could we do that? And the answer was just time and space. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, a few years later, and also with a more mature draft of the book and material that I think I had worked through, that wasn't just an emotional rough draft. And he really did read that kind of more emotional rough draft. The book, I feel, is a much more mature version of that initial reaction. That between the two, there's this sense of peace. And hopefully, as readers go through the book, by the end, they'll sense where we come from, you know, which is a sense of peace after all of it. But I'm grateful that we did, and I think he is too. But I guess the answer was time and distance and just missing each other.
Yeah. Well, I think the book is much richer for you not shying away from the complexities and from the tensions, and I just love it. Congratulations.
Thank you.
What's next for you? You got the next book in the works?
I don't. I have a baby in
you
the
got
works.
A baby in the works. Yeah, that's going to be quite a project.
That's the next project, and I don't
but
know.
But it is interesting that this book is coming out, you know, which processes your own childhood, your own father at the same time that you're about to be a mom yourself.
Yeah, what totally.
What a serendipitous timing this is.
It really is beautiful and unexpected, too, but I'm happy. You know, I feel really grateful that this book came out before the baby, that I have this like season to work on its promotion and to share before she comes into the world. So I'm really grateful for that. And I also feel like there's this nice sense of completion, you know, like one chapter of my life kind of not ending because they don't really end, but just kind of changing into something else. But doing so, like, I have the sense of completion with this book. I have a sense that I've you know, accomplished what I set out to do. And so there's like something that can happen with her that feels more complete because I'm walking into this new project without feeling like I didn't finish the one before. Yeah. And I'm hoping that for her, it'll be maybe an easier entry. Maybe what I learn in telling this story, and especially in my grandparents' story and the pain and the suffering that came with everything that they faced, and then the pain and suffering that they then poured into my father, and then the confusion that I carried from that might be transmuted somehow, and that there'll be maybe some kind of like alchemical thing that happens where I don't have to pass on this desire to know and this seeking and this questioning of how to connect with that pain. Maybe she'll just have an easier incarnation.
Mm. Yeah.
And that,
I don't know.
Well, I mean, you certainly, you know, you had this vision and you actualized it and have this document of this, you know, this whole process. So that, just that example is powerful. You know, your daughter will be able to say, oh, wow, you know, you can do that. You can come up with, you know, I need to do this. I'm going to do this. And I did this.
Well, and taking a deep dive into your childhood and really thinking deeply about the ways you were raised, I think will only help you make decisions about how you want to raise your child. Learn from your own experiences, what worked and what didn't.
I hope so. And I also see myself having a very rooted life. So maybe that's a little bit of the like counterbalance. Like, I really want a homestead and a, you know, a root, a hometown.
You're such a rebel. You rebelled against your dad by being grounded.
The dead are still touring.
Chickens,
well, kind of. Not quite the same.
Garcia, John Mayer. Mm. Huh.
Yeah, not quite the
same. Well, may I read one last thing?
Sure.
Absolutely.
I wanted to share this because I think it also shows, like, from the conflict in the beginning of not knowing what to make of my father as a child to being a woman who can see him with different eyes, that this scene kind of shows how he changes in my eyes over the course of the book. So this takes place in California near the end of the book, kind of right before the major fallout. But I wake the next morning to find my father jumping on his trampoline, laughing, breathing in the cool morning air. The golden glow of a rising sun illuminates him. When he sees me, he shouts, "Yahoo! Yahoo is the one!" I smile and wave. There are no neighbors for miles on either side of his land, nothing except this clearing, the cedar and pine forest, a narrow view of a sloping mountain range before us. I squat to pee behind a wide pine and contemplate living outdoors. With no comfort of home, how long would I last? A month? A year? How long would it take until I broke down, trading in the beauty of the land, the peace, the privacy, for a clean kitchen and a bath? There is something to be said about this way of life. Though lazily executed, it reminds me of how little we actually need. I stand, hidden behind my tree, and I watch my father, topless and tan, face aimed at the rising sun. I hear his steady breathing, a rhythm, a song. I hear in his breath the name of God, Yahweh, spelled the ancient way, with the vowel reserved, a space left to fill with breath, the essence of the great mystery from which we come. Into this space my father breathes his mighty breaths, and suddenly I understand. The trampoline is a vehicle on which to transcend. I watch and see his waking meditation, a place where he communes with the earth, with the air, with the invisible spirit contained in each and every inhale. I step back. There is no self-consciousness or shame, nothing but pride, a silent and deep acknowledgement of his being. Bouncing free, he is very wise indeed, enlightened even, for he has found a way to be completely present, buoyant in a timeless space, suspended briefly above the human story, a story as vast and ferocious as the sea. I see him, as if for the first time, interwoven into the fabric of divinity.
Hmm.
Thanks, Ayana. Thanks so much for sharing your book with us. And
thank you so much.
Coming to Slumber Party here on Asheville FM. Not only is it your dad's birthday, again, happy birthday, it's also Bob Dylan's
it's
birthday.
It's Bob Dylan's 76th birthday as well. It's exactly the same age as your dad, so there's serendipity there.
Very auspicious.
You have a very serendipitous life, don't
you? I'm a lucky lady. Well,
so we're
going to
play
so much.
I wanted to play, I think it's track, is it 15? It's an early version of A Hard Rain's Gonna Fall. One of my favorites. And this is a solo. This is off of Martin Scorsese did a wonderful Dylan movie called No Direction Home. I highly recommend it for anybody who's into Mr. Dylan or just want to check into that culture. Folk rock transition.
Far between the finished sundown and midnight's broken toll, we ducked inside the doorway's thunder went crashing. As majestic bells of bolts struck shadows in the sounds, seeming to be the chimes of freedom flashing, flashing for the warriors whose strength is not to fight, flashing for the refugees on the unarmed road of flight, and for each and every underdog soldier in the night. And we gazed upon the chimes of freedom flashing. city's melting furnace. Unexpectedly, we watched with faces hidden as the walls were tightening. As the echo of the wedding bells before the blowing rain dissolved into the veils of the lightning, tolling for the rebel, calling for the rig, tolling for the luckless, the abandoned and forsake, tolling for the outcast, burning constantly at stake. And we gazed upon the chimes of freedom flashing. The mad mystic hammering of the wild ripping hail, the sky cracked its palms in naked wonder at the clinging of the church bells, blew far into the night, leaving only bills of lightning and its thunder. Striking for the gentle, striking for the kind, striking for the guardians and protectors of the mind, and the poet and the painter who lights up his rightful time. And we gazed upon the chimes of freedom flashing. Wild cathedral evening, the rain unraveled tales, for the disrobed faceless forms of no position, tolling for the tongues with no place to bring their thoughts, all down in taking for granted situation. Tolling for the deaf and blind, tolling for the mute, for the mistreated mateless mother, the mistitled prostitute, for the misdemeanor outlaw, chained and cheated by pursuit. And we gazed upon the chimes of freedom flashing. Even though we cloud's white curtain in a far-off corner flowered, and the hypnotic splattered mist was slowly lifting, electric light still struck like arrows fired but for the ones condemned to drift or else be kept from drifting. Tolling for the searching on their speechless seeking trail, for the lonesome hearted lovers with two personal a tale, and for each unharmful gentle soul misplaced inside a jail. And we gazed upon the chimes of freedom flashing. Starry-eyed and laughing as I recall when we were caught, trapped by no track of ours, for they hang suspended. As we listened one last time and we watched with one last look, spellbound and swallowed till the tolling ended. Calling for the aching ones whose wounds cannot be nursed, while our countless confused accused misused strung out ones and worse. And for every hung up person in the whole wide universe, and we gazed upon the chimes of freedom flashing.
All right. Thank you, Bob Dylan, your birthday boy. And I just wanted to throw out there another thank you to our guest, Ayanna Cizak-Blatt, and she will be at Malaprops doing reading Saturday, June 3rd. She'll be over at the Congregation Beth Israel on Sunday, June 11th, and Firestorm Books Sunday, June 25th. So definitely get to one of those and check it out. It's a really powerful book, as you can tell from what she read. And I'm going to do a public service announcement, Jake. It's my favorite thing to do.
That's what you're here for, buddy.
The Daydreams Project. All right. The Daydreams Project provides unique opportunities for individuals to explore their own creative voice, empower themselves, and create alternative directions for their future. Deft Theater Arts is their 12-week inclusive arts program for folks with varied abilities, sponsored by four local agencies.